of our first half results through September of this year. As usual, I'm joined by Chris Church, our finance director, who will take you through the numbers in some detail, and I'll follow up with commentary on each of our divisions, as I always do. Since this is Chris's last results presentation with us, I'm sure that each of you will want to direct all of your questions to Chris. For my part, I just want to publicly thank Chris. He came into a very difficult business recovery plan. As a result of his efforts, we are delivering a genuine recovery with a sustainable business for the benefit of our employees, our customers, and our shareholders. So I want to thank Chris. Chris's successor, Matt Gregory, will join us on December 1st. Before turning over to Chris, I just want to touch on our results overall by pointing out the fact that when we presented our results last year, 6 months ago, we were explicit in our guidance about these results would largely reflect the impact of the changes in our rail portfolio, specifically the end of the franchises of ScotRail and First Capital Connect. Now, this was something well known to all of you, but the fact is that that change finds its way into our reported numbers for the first time in this period. And when you consider the fact that we generate the vast majority of our revenue in the second half of the year and realize a vast majority of our profits in the second half of the year, and that phenomenon is exaggerated this year as a result of the shift in school operating days out of this year into next, the sheer magnitude of the change in rail just masks the continuing improvement in the underlying business. But the business is going forward, consistent with our transformation plan. We just want to be very clear that we retain our confidence and our commitment to deliver those goals, specifically the improvement in margins that will lead to excess free cash flow in 2017, as everyone expects to see. Now, many of our markets are tougher than they were set forth or forecasted when we put the transformation plan together. But we're adapting, we're making changes, as all businesses have to do. And when I go through some of the divisions, I will indicate how we are doing that to still be in a position to be accountable for delivering our goals. And with that, I'll turn it over to Chris and ask him to take you through the numbers. So I do want to note, as I do so, that the increase in our expectations as a result of the change in rail pensions, which is noted on this first slide, Chris will take you through in more detail.
Thanks, Tim, and good morning, everybody. Overall in a summary. So what I will do in my usual way is to take you through the financial numbers and just try and put some color on the results. Other than the change in rail pensions that Tim has just alluded to, I'd like to, first of all, that's positive. Some people were not clear on that this morning. It increases our numbers. There is no change in any of the guidance that we've given so far. As you know, and Tim again just mentioned, our results are second half loaded, and that really is all about due to the timing of the school year relative to our financial year. And that has become even more exaggerated this year because of this reduction in the number of school operating days. And that has a bigger impact in the first half relative to the impact in the second half. Also in bus, and as we've told you previously, we're taking a one-off restructuring charge of £7 million for the year to rationalize some of the bus depots. And we're taking that above the line. And more of that cost is in the first half compared with the second half, which again is all working to exaggerate the first half, second half shift. So the overall £88 million profit for the period reflects the items that I've just mentioned, but also the significant change as a result of the Capital Connect and ScotRail franchises coming to an end. And also this, let me talk about the change in the pensions accounting. And that has an impact of overall for the half, positive $7 million, and for the full year, that will be a positive number of $15 million. And the reason for that is, and I won't bore you with the technical details of IAS 19 and IFRS 14 and so on, in essence, what it does is it changes the way we account for pensions, because previously it didn't reflect the underlying commercial reality of the contracts that we have with the government. Because in those contracts, that is based upon the cash cost of the pension charges that we pay during the period. The P&L charge was higher. And what this does is it brings it in line. So the two are now the same. I've been asked a couple of times this morning, is this just a one-off for this year? No, it isn't. It's how we will account for it going forwards. Obviously, it relates to the First Great Western and TPE contracts. And obviously, as long as we have those contracts, which we hope will be for a long time, that $15 million will be there. And as we win new contracts, that's how we will account for it on that basis. But the key message is it now brings it in line with the commercial reality of the underlying contracts and also in line with what the rest of the industry and how they are treating it as well. On cash flow, again, that was very much in line with our expectations. And as is normal for the half, there was a cash outflow in the first half, a little bit higher than last year, but that's purely down to the timing of some working capital movements. And again, no change in guidance to what we've said previously of pre-the-rail franchise outflows. It will be flat cash for the year. And as you can see, the rail outflow in the first half is £20 million. There's about another £10 million to come in the second half as we close out ScotRail. But again, no change on that compared with what we've seen previously. And during the half, CapEx was £155 million, that's ex-rail, because as you know, that's self-financing, exactly in line with what we expected, and that will increase into the normal range of £350 to £400 million for the full year as previously guided. If I turn now to the overall numbers, I've covered most of the points in my comments previously, but I just draw your attention to the margin movement, an increase in overall margins of a tenth in the first half. I'd expect that expansion to increase for the full year. On finance costs, as you know, the vast majority of our finance costs relates to the bond program. But on the other costs, which are more flexible, we continue to work to make those as cost-efficient as possible. Give you an example of that, some of the higher-cost finance leases, we've been reducing those during the period, and you can see the effect of that in these overall numbers. On tax, again, as we previously said, as more of the profits come from the U.S., the tax rate will increase over time. No change to what we've guided previously, so 26%. For the full year, increasing over time, all things being equal, into the 30% over the next few years. So if I now turn to the key moving parts, this bridge sets out the revenue movement and the profit movement at a group level, and it really covers the points that I've just been talking about. As well as you can see on there the impact of the rail portfolio move and the impact further down of the pensions. So X those items that I've just talked about, the underlying growth in the period is revenue increase of 0.8% and a 1.6% increase in operating profit. So just before I turn to the division-by-division profit, a few words on fuel and on FX. So first of all, on FX, just to remind you that at the EPS level, we broadly have a what we call a natural hedge. So you have the impact of the translation of the US profits from dollars into pounds mitigated significantly by the U.S. dollar-denominated fuel costs in bus and in rail, and some dollar-denominated interest and tax costs. On fuel, first of all, just to remind you that in the student and transit business, a significant proportion of our contracts have pass-through clauses, so we don't take the fuel risk in significant elements of those of that business. Where we are taking the risk, there's a rolling hedge program, and details of that are set out in the appendices in the books that you have in front of you. The one thing I would point out, and again, this is a reminder, you know this, is that in Greyhound, we hedge a lower proportion of the potential risk because of the interrelationship with the demand profile that we've seen very much over the last 6 to 9 months. So if I now turn to the individual divisions, as usual, we put the appendices, because I know in the appendices, the individual bridges, because I know you like those, but what I'll try and do is pull out the key points from each of the divisions. So first of all, student. As you know, we make all of our money in the second half. So as you see, the numbers are very, very small for the first half, and that is normal. As I alluded to earlier, compared with the previous year, this is impacted by the reduction in the operating school days. The impact in the first half is $12 million, and that's really associated with the late startup of the school year because of the timing of when Labor Day was. Impact of that is $12 million, as they say. There's another $5 million coming in the second half, given the total of $17 million for the year. And that is associated with the timing of Easter at the end of the year. As we look forward into next year, into 16-17, that's a more normal year. So year on year, the $17 million effectively hit this year will be recovered in next year's numbers. Other than this, in student, the key moving parts are very successful bid season, a continuation of the cost efficiencies as part of our $50 million cost efficiency program, mitigated to an extent by the labor shortages. And Tim's going to come back and talk about all of those in more detail shortly. So in transit, in our view, a solid period, especially in terms of margin. As you know, this is a very low capital requirement business. And margins holding at 7.2%, in our view, is a good performance. Clearly, the top line, as Tim alluded to earlier, has been impacted by the oil price affecting the Canadian tar sands business in our shuttle business within within transit. In Greyhound, as expected, the impact of the significant fall in oil prices has impacted the top line. Like-for-like revenue growth, a reduction of just over 6%. Assuming that oil prices stay where they are today, which is our anticipation, but we will see, and that's how we plan, I would expect to see similar trends to that through to the third quarter of this year. And that's when the oil price fell off the cliff last year. So once we reach the anniversary date, those sorts of trends should reverse. And the 6% is very, very similar to what you've seen elsewhere in the industry, as others have recently reported. The thing that I would point out is on the point-to-point business, our Greyhound Express business, the reduction is somewhat less at 3%. The final point I would just make on Greyhound, any margin reduction in any business is, of course, disappointing. But the fact that we've been working on the cost base over the last few years and turning more of it from a fixed cost basis into a variable cost basis has allowed us very much to mitigate the impact of the demand challenges, which is why you see the margin holding up fairly well. So in bus, the transformation continues to move forward. And as I reported at the pre-close, we've been accelerating the cost efficiency programs. And that has helped us to mitigate some of the more challenging environments that we've seen in the market, particularly on concessionary fares, and that you've heard about from ourselves and from others in the market. Underlying commercial passenger revenue growth is positive at plus 2.2%. When you take account of the impact of the concessionary fares, the overall growth is 1.3%. I mentioned the depot changes earlier. Overall, as I said, the total cost for the year is £7 million, and we've taken £4 million of that in these numbers in the first half. You will see in the causals at the back of your books that we've made £10 million of cost savings during the first half, and I would expect that to be a higher number in the second half. And that will lead us to get into a position that X these one-off restructuring costs, year-on-year margin improvement will be of the order of 1% year-on-year for the full-year outlook. In rail, operationally, it continues to perform at the top end of our expectations. Underlying revenue growth of 7% supported by passenger growth of 3.5%. And the numbers on the slide obviously include the £7 million benefit from the change in accounting. Just a quick word on group items. Though it is slightly higher in the R half compared with last year, there's no change to our guidance for the full year, which is that the costs will be more in line with what happened in 13-14, i.e. £32 million of group costs. It depends upon the cost of my leaving due, of course. But rather than the costs that you saw last year in 14-15, which included a number of one-off projects. So don't please take this number and double it, because you'll get to the wrong answer. So if I now turn to CapEx. I mentioned earlier that ex-rail investment in the period was £155 million. For the full year, I'd expect that to increase to what we previously guided in the range of £350 to £400 million, again, ex-rail. And the profile very much remains what we've seen before. The vast majority of the investment is in the bus fleet. But because we are so focused on making sure that we get really good returns for all the investments that we make, we are making some tough decisions. So, for example, in Greyhound, because the market is what it is, we've not placed the bus order this year. And our investment in Greyhound is very much on the yield management systems, which Tim will come back to later. In terms of returns, there's details set out in the backs of your books, but I would emphasize that return on capital is far more relevant when you look at the full year numbers rather than that for the half. So turning to cash, I have effectively covered most of the points in my comments on divisional profits, cash, and working capital, that, as I said, is unusually large at the half. The key message is no change to our overall guidance for the year, as I said earlier, of flat cash, ex the rail outflows. On our overall financial position, again, it remains strong. We have very good liquidity, supported by the bond program and the £800 million revolver. The first major bond maturity is in September 2018. I think you all know this, but the key event during the period since we last reported was S&P upgrading us to BBB- stable, which is in line with the Fitch rating. So in summary, although we've been impacted by some of the items that I've talked about, overall trading is in line and there's no change to the guidance that we've given for the full year.
Chris? So I'll go through each of the divisions. Let's start, as we always do, with students. So we completed the second year of our repricing of this portfolio, and average price increases across that, the repriced business is about 5.3%. Having achieved that price increase, it was done on a retention rate that was actually a few percentage points above what we had budgeted. Now, last year, we had average price increase of 4.5%, you'll recall. And I said when I reported that number that we really needed to push pricing a bit more because of, among other reasons, the driver shortages we'd encountered. Well, that problem has only worsened through the period and really showed itself in September. Now, we do have the benefit of being able to move best practice across the group. So we were able to take the computerized applicant tracking system that First Bus had really developed and modified and move it over to the states and the students to replace their kind of locally operated paper-based system. And the advantage of this is it has allowed us to make efficiencies in the way we recruit people, bringing more people into the system, but more importantly, not losing people while they're going through the pipeline of background checks, drug checks, and the training, which we had typically had a very high loss rate as we were taking them through that. However, while this will be, I think, an important improvement over the longer term, it isn't going to address the short term that we face, because this is really an economy-wide issue as the U.S. is approaching a 5% unemployment rate. And I think if you look at the earnings announcements of Walmart and others, you could see that this is a issue of that, you know, as we get closer and closer to full employment in the U.S. Having said that, I want to emphasize this is only hitting us on a local basis. We do not see any broad escalation in labor costs across the group. What has happened to us in about a dozen or so locations of our 500 locations, we have acute driver shortages that are forcing us to expend significant resources in order to still be able to deliver the service. Now, the solution to this is, as I said, improving our attraction and retention of candidates through things like our applicant tracking system, finding some other counterbalancing, offsetting efficiencies, which we will do. But ultimately, it'll find its way back into our pricing because we have to make sure that all of our costs are covered as we operate going forward. This will make for a tougher year this year than we were expecting in students, but it isn't of a magnitude that would cause us to back off of our goals. We will still hit our mark, and when you factor in the days that snap back to us next year, the completion of the efficiency program that Chris alluded to, you can see how we get that step up to the double-digit margins as we have forecasted. In First Transit, Chris already mentioned that this is a business that has been challenged by low oil prices. You know, it is this shuttle segment of transit which has overperformed year after year after year. It's faced the contraction of activity in the oil sands regions of Canada. Having said that, this team continues to deliver, however. We keep delivering new business, and we have a number of very attractive opportunities in the pipeline, which we're excited about, and we're also exploring new markets. And the best example of that is the recently announced transit contract with the government of Panama. So we will continue to explore related markets within North America, such as commuter rail in the U.S., as well as looking about taking our expertise to some new geographies, as we've done in Panama. This will remain a very solid business going forward. Greyhound. We talked about in the past, and Chris alluded to the fact that it is also obviously challenged with lower oil prices because of the attractiveness of using the private automobile. I believe it was in August, the U.S. set an all-time record for the number of miles clocked in private automobiles. Like, gee whiz, numbers is something like 270 billion. I mean, it's plainly that change is affecting the trading in Greyhound. And as Chris pointed out, our competitors have reported numbers similar to ours. Chris told you about in the long haul, we've seen a reduction of some 6%, but in our point-to-point business, the reduction has been about 3%. I would point out that it is that point-to-point business that is the correct comparator with our competitor in North America. Having said that, however, and acknowledge this challenge, I always want to emphasize Greyhound remains a very good business for us, delivering attractive margin and is cash generative to the group even at these low oil prices. I also want to emphasize and talk to you today that the commercial transformation of Greyhound that we've been talking to you about for over a year is being delivered to schedule. So, for example, it was in September that we've turned on the new pricing engine. We've started to feed routes through it, and over the next 6 months, we will convert the entire company and all of the routes to being priced using the new methodology. This is very exciting because it allows us to more efficiently price existing demand, but more importantly, we hope it generates demand in local markets that have heretofore been neglected by the blanket kind of pricing that's been done by Greyhound. Isn't enough to just change prices, of course. You've got to be able to tell people about them, and you've got to sell to them the way they buy. And that's why we're also excited that we've recently unveiled a new website for Greyhound that completely transforms the way customers can get prices, can purchase tickets, can get information. There's real-time bus tracking technology on the site. There's all sorts of other services and information available to the customers. It just completely changes the experience for customers in dealing with Greyhound. Now, the new pricing engine that we've brought online is a learning system. So as it makes changes in local markets, that impact is fed back into the system, which further adjusts the algorithms for the next season and period, so it will get better and better. Now, and as we've benchmarked other businesses that have made a change like this, such as airlines and even some hotels, we've seen actually a fairly immediate impact. But we are being cautious given the environment in which we're introducing this system about making predictions how quickly this will have an effect. I will say, though, we are very excited about this transformation, and while we would love to be introducing these tools into a much more vibrant market, more like what we saw 18 months ago, if you think about it, these tools are even more important to the environment we're operating in right now, because we have to be in a position to generate our own growth, not to just wait for what the economy gives us. And it's these tools, as we perfect them, that are going to allow us to do that. It's one of the reasons why, even in this environment, we remain very excited by this story. There are some other developments in the period that I think will be relevant to the future, really at both ends of the country, in Mexico and in Canada. We recently opened up our terminals in Mexico, new terminals in Mexico. We're the first certificated U.S. carrier that's been permitted to be allowed to provide regular scheduled domestic service in Mexico. So we've opened terminals in Monterrey, Nuevo Laredo. We're providing regular service between those points and now introducing movements across the border as well. So we'll go to Laredo in Texas. We'll go on to Austin. We'll go on to Dallas. And this is just the beginning of our exploitation of this business opportunity. We're very, you know, our footprint's very tiny right now. But if you know the bus business, you know what a huge market Mexico is, and that this is, I think, a very promising thing for the future. At the other end of the spectrum is Canada. Those of you who know our business and our numbers know that Canada, Greyhound Canada, is a drag on our results. It masks, actually, how healthy the margin is in the U.S. Greyhound. And we had been nursing this business back as we pulled it out of a regulated environment to about flat results, and we had hope to get it into positive territory, which was actually a good result given we haven't put much capital into Canada at all. But with the change in the oil price, that progress has been set back. And in fact, it was really kind of a double whammy in Canada, because it's not only that the private automobile took more and more of the business, it's also the decline in economic activity in Western Canada. Because there has been a noticeable impact. And when you consider that 25% of our revenues in Canada are from the package business, I mean, our Greyhound buses in Western Canada all have, you know, trailers on the back of them moving packages. All of that has been, you know, suffering from the fact that economic activity in Western Canada with the energy business has been depressed. So what are we doing about it? We can only tell you we're examining all options. And you could understand how or why we wouldn't be able to go into all of them in detail now. But when we are able to, we will advise you on the next step in Canada. But I assure you, we are determined to deal with this issue in a definitive way. In First Bus, we, as Chris has said, have faced kind of the mixed market conditions that other operators have already reported on, specifically growth in commercial passengers, but it's offset by this kind of mysterious disappearance of concessionary travel. I am particularly pleased, however, with First Bus and the management of First Bus for their ability to get ahead of this issue. You know, we have cut expenses and made efficiencies in an extraordinary way in this period that allow us, to, notwithstanding this tougher trading environment, to still be in a position to hit our goals for double-digit margins as predicted. You know, we've always said that the remaining improvement in our margins between where we are and double digits would come roughly half from efficiencies and half from adding volume to existing mileage. Plainly, if volume is challenged, that formula is going to be challenged, which is why the team saw this coming and made the extraordinary, somewhat painful cost reductions in this period that put us in a position to absorb that shift and to still deliver our margins for the through the plan. And I really think they've done a great job in that regard. Now, the big news in bus, of course, is the decision in support of commercial bus operators turning down Nexus' attempt to impose regulations through a quality contract. We're obviously very pleased with the fair representation of the facts in that decision. But for our part, we think the real answer is to just continue to push our partnerships with local authorities and to prove that it's those partnerships that are the fastest and most effective way to continuous improvement in local bus services. I was recently at significant events in Bristol and in Cornwall in the last month, attended by our most significant stakeholders. And I was really gratified to see in both gatherings just solid support for continuing to advance partnerships with First. And when you think about how important Bristol is to us, and when you consider that Cornwall is actually the first jurisdiction that was given devolution powers, the fact that the way forward that they see is advancing partnerships with First Bus, I think is a real shot in the arm for us, and it's the way forward, we think, for all other jurisdictions in which we operate. Take the finally to rail. Stories unchanged in rail, just really strong trading. 7% revenue increase underpinned by absolutely solid passenger volume growth at the same time. You know, we await the decision on TPE. We expect it in early December. The guidance we have. But in the meantime, we just continue to work on our other bids. As you know, next year will be a very big bidding year in rail, and there's still two-thirds of the prize up for bidding. So we're busy working on that. We're also very gratified by the response we've gotten to the rebranding of Great Western Railway. We did this coincident with the longer direct award we received, because we, you know, we are inheritors of this unbelievable heritage from Brunel that is precious to all those communities to the west. And we wanted to use it to kind of just signal the magnitude of the transformation, the rebuilding program that's happening on Great Western and will be happening over the next couple of years. And it's just really been great the way people have received it. And this kind of change actually is completely consistent with our strategy across the company, where across all of our divisions, we believe in a greater emphasis in local brands. And if you look at the way we've changed delivery on our buses, for example, you can see that. There's this whole idea of getting the message across in each of the jurisdictions that this is your local bus company, this is your local train company. We think that has real traction in the market. So in summary, trading is in line with our expectations. The fact is that the dramatic change in the rail portfolio is of such overwhelming magnitude, it does dwarf the rest of the numbers and obscures the improvement in the other businesses. We remain on track to deliver the margin improvements that will provide the excess free cash flow in 2017, as we have indicated in the past. Yes, some of our markets are in tougher trading conditions than had been projected when the plan was first put forth, and that puts more of a burden on us. But we are making the changes required to still allow us to get there. And I do think First Bus is a great example of that, because the volume growth is not as healthy as originally projected, but the fact of the matter is we've made the changes that still allow us to get to double digits in 2017. So we remain confident in the transformation plan and are happy to take any questions you might have. Thank you.
We've got a mic.
Good morning. Edward Stanford from Landlord. Two questions, please. First, in the statement, you talked about a lack of organic growth and conversions in the U.S. Do you attribute that to anything in particular, and how do you see that developing? And second, we all know, of course, that students in transit have a very high degree of fuel pass-through in the contract. I wonder, given the fluctuations in the fuel price, whether that has changed in the last few years as a result of the your pricing decisions and the changes in the fuel price, whether that level of pass-through in the contracts has also materialized at all. Thank you.
The lack of organic conversion, it does shift from year to year. Just so we're clear what we're talking about, when we talk about organic growth in the student business, prior to the crisis, it was kind of expected that every year you would get about a 1% revenue kicker just from additional business your existing school district gave you as they, you know, looked at their demands and the service levels they wanted to maintain. That completely disappeared during the dark years of the crisis. That came back over the last year and a half or so. We started to see organic again and thought, well, great, we're getting back to a normal period. This year, we've seen less of it, and, you know, you are hesitant to diagnose this until you see whether it's a trend or whether this just is a kind of a fluctuation or around the mean. The lack of conversion, there was just far less conversion opportunities this year than we've seen, almost only a third of what was available in the prior year. And again, I think this is just a fluctuation and will change year to year. As far as the fuel pass-through, I don't think we'll see much of a change as a result of our pass-through.
No, I think in terms of the vast majority of the contracts have that pass-through. In student, it's slightly less than that. But I think, so it is, as Tim says, very much the same. I wouldn't expect to see it. Basically, once the contracts are done, we hedge then to make sure that we're securing the risk. But the element that's not, and I think this is probably what you're alluding to, Edward, is that as we go forwards, because of our hedging policy, we said previously we were significantly hedged out for 18 months or so. As you go forwards, we will get some of the benefit of that fuel cost or lower fuel cost coming through in the results, which will help our margin increase as well. But more so in student than in transit.
Damien Burrell, Bank of Canada. Can I ask
probably three questions, please. On the UK bus side, could you tell us in terms of your margin aspirations, how much you've got baked in terms of BSOC risk and, you know, what your contingencies are around that if we do see changes later this month? And also what kind of sort of labor cost inflation assumptions you have in there, again, given that the UK labor market shows signs at least of following the US. Secondly, in Greyhound, of the revenue decline, could you give us an idea of how much of that was volume versus price, particularly to give an indication of, you know, early gains maybe from the new revenue management scheme? And then if the trends don't reverse, and it's not just fuel costs, but it's things like car sharing and things like that, how much faster can you accelerate the revenue management program to try and sort of combat that? And then the very final one, maybe it's a longer-term strategic question. If we do see the buses bill result in some form of tendering, at least for the sort of more, how can it, dogmatic local authorities, how much of an incentive do you think that is for the industry in the UK to start to look at consolidation on the local bus side if there are issues of sort of tendering-based competition rather than competition of the bus industry versus the car per se, which we have at the moment?
Can we switch that off at the back? I think we have Thunderbirds coming in. You do the beast. You do the beast, so I'll do the labor cost. Nick, Greyhound revenue.
Okay, on the BSOG risk, we don't really see a big reduction from BSOG. We, and you know, we've had a lot of discussions with the department on this subject. They are looking at it, but I think their focus isn't so much on reduction as it's on making sure that it also serves other ends. So they may incent other behaviors in the way the money is doled out, whether it's to promote the efficiency of the technology in terms of consumption of fuel. But we think that, especially given our capital programs, we're in a position to make sure that we continue to receive our fair share of BSOG. On the labor cost assumption?
We've baked in overall just over 2%. Going forward, which we expect to be normal. But then what we've taken account of, for example, is other costs such as on holiday pay and so on, that we've built that into the forecast going forward. So I think we've, in our view, we've got a reasonable assumption. I think, yes, you've seen some higher impacts in the US, but I think within our overall assumptions that we've got that, we've also obviously also continued to look at further cost efficiencies that if that came through. I think we've got it about right, Damien, but I don't see a major risk there.
As far as the acceleration of, the Greyhound revenue characterization, volume versus price, and then acceleration of the system, it's mostly a volume. I mean, there is some price in there. It is a bit of a mix between the fact that you sometimes, in order to, you know, that we have made price adjustments, especially in the shorter haul markets, but it's largely the fact that the volume isn't there. As far as acceleration, we are under a pretty accelerated schedule to convert the entire system within the next 6 months. What's really happening is we've been adding about 25 routes a week. As we have introduced the system, we will freeze the system during the holiday period because that is so critical to us. We can't risk anything that would destabilize it. And then it just ramps up very, very quickly over the next few months. the real thing we're trying to accelerate are the other pieces. So, for example, getting in a solid a loyalty program with customers is critical. I mean, if any of you are EasyJet users, you've probably recently received an email talking about their 20th anniversary and talking about the first trip you ever took on them. I mean, these things really work, and so we will be in a position to be able to ping our customers and remind them of the latest price. I mean, these are things never done in that business, and we don't have that online. That will be coming in the next few months, as well as bus side scanning for our drivers using smartphones. We've already pioneered that. Know it works on Bolt bus. We'll be spreading that across all of Greyhound, which also allows us to take out some of our back office costs if we eliminate the paper trail on ticket selling within Greyhound. So there's some other pieces, Damien, we are pushing to accelerate, but the actual pricing engine, I think we have a pretty aggressive plan as it is. As far as the buses bill, again, I think right now, you have to take all of these threats very seriously, but all indications are that the Treasury tests on making changes, which are remarkably similar to the quality contract tests, the five tests of, you know, commercial strategy, whether you have the management capability, whether it makes financial sense, are going to be part of that formulation. And if they are, we think, like you saw in the Nexus decision, that we always win that fair presentation of the facts. If something awful were to happen, which is really what the supposition of your question is, from a competitive standpoint in regulation, would it lead to consolidation? I don't know. That would not something I guess I would speculate on.
Damien, can I just add one comment on the wage inflation? Clearly one of the key points is the minimum wage, and we've done some specific exercises to look at our workforces in bus and rail, and we have a very, very small line, fractions of 1% of people who are not paid the minimum wage, and we're actually quite significantly above that, which again is one of the things that would mitigate any significant pressure to go outside of normal inflation.
I also can't help the pass up the opportunity for our own commercial here on buses, and that is that if we hadn't made the changes we've made, if our shareholders had supported the changes of rebuilding this bus business and doing the right thing and changing the profile, I think we'd be facing a very different outcome in re-regulation. And just to look at Bristol, it is stunning the change in our profile in that city in the last 3 years. I mean, we were in a very difficult place before with the mayor, with all the officials, with all the press in that town. And, you know, I was just down there, as I say, at their celebration of the Green Capital Fund, and they couldn't say enough good things about us and the kinds of changes we're bringing forward. And that's what this investment does for you. It allows you to, I think, control some of these political fights.
Thank you very much. Jolyon Wellington from JP Morgan. Two questions, please. Just on UK bus and First Student, I want to ask about a bit more detail on the costs and the cost savings. So you talked about in UK bus, 10 million of cost savings in the first half, and you said you'd expect to get a similar amount in the second. Can you just touch on what the sort of annualization impact of that is, I guess, from where you expect to get from the end of this year to where you'll be in FY17? So in other words, what the kind of year-on-year impact will be, that delta. And I guess what I'm getting at is trying to feed through into the double-digit margin target. Can you sort of just walk through a little bit on that? And then I guess the same question really with respect to student, and specifically, can you sort of quantify what extra cost there's going to be from the labor, from the driver shortages, either in, I guess, dollar terms or sort of hit to margin? And then you talked about $30 million of cost savings. You're partway through that. How far through that? And you know, how does that sort of feed into that overall margin bridge, please?
If I start and then you can
jump in.
Okay.
Say more than you want.
Yeah. Yeah, so obviously very, John, and just some very detailed questions there. So if I first of all take, first, as I mentioned when I was standing up, the overall savings in the first half was $10 million. I think I actually said not the same in the second half, but a bit more than that. And that comes from a whole range of cost savings. Obviously, we've got a younger bus fleet now, so the maintenance costs are lower. We have the Drive Green process where we ensure, which is technology on the buses, to make sure that all the drivers are driving efficiently. We go through reviewing all of the overhead expenditure that we spend. And again, so there's a whole raft of items that actually allow us to get to that north of $20 million for the full year. And obviously, because it's growing in the second half, then that will obviously flow through into next year in terms of run rate. Also within there, you've got the increasing benefit of the fuel costs as the hedges roll out, and that actually turns out to be a relatively significant number that comes through in the following year. And I'm not going to give you a bridge for 17, but all I would say is if you think about those numbers, go away. And think about those numbers, you can very easily see how we get very close to the 10% in 16, 17. If everything goes extremely well, and as we've seen from what Tim and I have talked about in business, things happen, but if things went extremely well, we would get within a match whisker of the 10%, or even possibly get to the 10%. I wouldn't put that into your models yet. Otherwise,
we'll get into the 10% and exit.
Yeah, definitely it's an exit rate. It's just whether you hit it in
the year.
The
other piece you have to remember is the absence of extraordinary costs that we've eaten in this year.
Yeah.
So you've got that. You've got the cum of the cost savings. You've got the fuel kicker, and it's built to the right place.
Yeah, and just building on what Tim just said, just remember it's not only the $7 million of costs that we're eating this year. Those depots that we're rationalizing or merging or selling incurred about $3 million of losses in this year. So they will not clearly repeat in the following year. So it's all that that cumes up to giving us the confidence, definitely in the exit rate. Whether it turns into a full rate for the year depends upon things probably a little bit outside of our control.
And then student,
Soon
you've got the days,
yeah.
So that's a big factor. As big a factor is the third round of pricing. You have another fuel kicker in students. We're not assuming the driver problem goes away, so we're putting those a penalty on our projections as we look forward. But we think we'll manage it better as we're continue to perfect the system of bringing people in. And there is the completion of the cost program, but that, although that commitment is through the plan period, which is into that next year, a very large part of it will already be completed this year.
Sure. Yep.
Morning, it's Joe Thomas from HSBC. Just following on from your answer there, Chris, the exceptional restructuring costs, what are you expecting them to be in future years? Obviously, they're taken above the line now, but I'm just wondering the magnitude of that. Secondly, you were talking, I think for the first time that I recall today, about expansion in Latin America. Can you give some talk about the sort of startup costs that we should associate with expansion in Mexican coach and Panamanian transit? And then finally, in the U.S. school bus business, you're obviously being very successful in getting prices up, and retention rates are quite high, but I just wonder, the business that you're not retaining, where is that going to, and how do you sort of view the smaller independent end of the market that used to be disruptive in the past?
Sorry, take the first one?
Sure.
So When you started off by saying exceptional items, I was about to say, no, we're not taking it as exceptional. It's above the line, but I think you've corrected that. Of course, always you're looking about rationalizing your bus depots as to what you do to make sure they're as efficient as possible. But as to the extent that we can see at the moment and included in all of our plans, the 7 million we would see as being a relatively large number. So if we did anything in future years, it would be very, very small. So please don't build 7 million a year into your models.
As far as the cost of going into these new markets, first of all, there is no, I mean, you don't have to worry about any cost with regard to the move into Panama. I don't want to talk about the terms of that contract, especially since we're still working through some things with the government, but it just isn't significant. It's not a material item. With regard to Mexico, one of the things about the Mexican bus market is you have to have terminals. You're not allowed to just take a Bolt model down there. It would be brilliant for that, but you have to have a terminal. So there is a few millions we've spent in building those two terminals, but the thing about building in Mexico is very, very inexpensive. It's not a big drain on the capital budget. I would that we could expand much faster than I think the bureaucracy in Mexico will allow us to. As far as school bus and the lost business, we had a piece go to FTA, but it's just a grab bag of different local operators. And that element hasn't changed dramatically one way or another this year.
I think the key for me on this, Joe, is just this positioning of the other two major players, so Dyromo, National Express, and STA. And what they're saying publicly is very, very similar to what we're saying, is that they are focused on the returns when they put their bids in. And that was one of the things when we first started on this program, we said to you, look, we are actually going to be returns focused. That means we're going to be putting up the prices. The consequence of that may be a significant reduction in business, but that was what we were prepared to do. As it's turned out, and we still have another third to go next year, but that has not materialized, partly because we've been able to explain to the school boards and so on why we're doing it, but also because the other players have taken exactly the same approach that we have, which we were hopeful for because we were clearly the market leader, but we weren't certain of. So I think that has also helped to get through these price increases.
Just coming back to you on the Mexican point, Tim, you talked about the capital cost of expanding there. Is there any operating losses that we should build in for?
Well, I mean, you know, when we start up the businesses, you always do with introductory rates to bring people in. You know, we were pretty much giving the service away for the first few weeks. But it's, the service is still so tiny, you wouldn't even be lost in the rounding.
Yeah, we're talking hundreds.
I mean, we're talking, we start up with 20 buses.
Alexia.
Hi, good morning. It's Alexia Dogan from Goldman Sachs. I had three questions, please. Just firstly, could you update us on sort of the dividend policy and what the board's view with regards to sort of reintroducing a dividend? Then secondly, clearly we're going through a very rail-heavy tendering process. Should we expect you to bid for all rail franchises that are coming up over the next year? And then just a very quick question on the net interest. So should we expect this benefit from the finance leases to continue into the second half? Thanks.
Well, as far as dividend policy, this is a discussion. We said before, the board is always going to be looking at sustainability of the cash generation, prospects going forward, and the signals that is important to them to send in terms of where we are as a company and transforming ourselves. And those judgments will be made over the next few months, and I really can't get in front of them. As far as the rail-heavy tendering and therefore bidding over the next year, yes, you should assume that we will be very active through that. As far as I'll let you do the net interest.
Yeah, we started making some of the savings in the second half of last year when you started to see some of the benefit coming through. You've seen the continuation of that into the first half of this year. So I think it's broadly a $4 million benefit this year. I wouldn't expect to see anywhere near that amount. I think for modeling purposes, I'd use broadly flat, and then hopefully we can beat that a little bit.
Martin Brown, Short Capital. Three questions, please. I think no other one's been stolen. Just on the pension deficit, notice a big drop in the deficit. Clearly a slightly higher discount rate and lower inflation assumption there. Just remind me where you are in terms of the cycle of triennial reviews and when that's next up for discussion in terms of cash contributions. And secondly, just in terms of the balance sheet and refinancing, have you had or do you envisage having any talks soon with your bondholders, clearly given that the expensive debt is obviously shortening in terms of maturity, so are you looking to have talks about refinancing that into longer-term, lower-coupon debt? And finally, on CapEx, could you just flesh out a little bit of your thoughts for 17 and 18 in terms of CapEx ex-rail, and how you expect that to develop, either CapEx depreciation or some kind of measure for us to judge where that will be going forward? Thank you.
Okay, Martin, I think those three are mine. On the pensions, you're absolutely right. It's the discount rate that's principally driven the 80-odd million, 88 I think it is, reduction in the deficit. Again, I think as we've always said, that a 1% movement in discount rate effectively wipes out the deficits that we've gotten because those have been moving positive over the period. That's why you've seen a big reduction. In terms of the next triennial, I think it's in 2 years. Nick,
no, BAS is in
April 16th for BAS.
North America,
yeah, is every year. And so, in terms of cash contributions, at the moment, and you can see from the cash flow, it's between 25, 30 million a year across the all the schemes. I would plan on that staying broadly the same, certainly in the short term. In terms of balance sheet, yes, as I mentioned when I was standing up, the first bond renewal is in September 18. And again, Martin, you're absolutely right that the make-whole premium that you would have to pay reduces over time, so that for people who don't know about this, but basically, if you want to buy back your bonds earlier, you effectively just have to pay the interest up front. And that, at this stage, so far out from September 18, would be a substantial cost. People, if they are thinking about buying back the bonds earlier, tend to do it 12 months or so before maturity, in that 6 to 12-month range, sometimes a little bit more dependent or further out, depending upon what's happening in the market. Stagecoach have done it this year. You saw that they did it a little bit earlier. The cost would be still far, far too punitive to have those talks at the moment. And
as far as the capital program, I mean, we're not signaling anything. You should assume a capital program of the same magnitude. However, like this year, when we made the adjustment on Greyhound, we are very focused on these returns. So we will adjust it based on the trading conditions in our view of the future.
Hi, morning. It's Alan Day from Deutsche Bank. I've got quite a few questions, actually. Sorry, everybody. On cash flow, if we rewind 2 years, I think we were talking about 4 years before we get to free cash flow positive or, a significant inflection. Is that still reasonable to expect it in 2 years' time, or or should we really be thinking that's been pushed back? Maybe if I do it one at a time, actually, it'd be easier.
No, we've always said the inflection, I think, the inflection point, it depends where your 4 years starts from. We've always said the inflection point is next year, i.e. 16-17. That's what I think we said however many years ago, and that has not changed. And as Tim alluded to when he was speaking, that is still what we believe to be the inflection point. And the key drivers of that will be the EBITDA improvement from the business turnaround. And within the working capital, there will be some benefit of that as well, because, again, as we spoke about at the full year, we need to get some of the things that have been done historically out of the system, and we will have achieved that, so you get back into a more normal cash profile.
Okay, thank you. My next question is just on first unit but clarification. Everyone is talking about sort of 4-5% price increases on what they're retaining. Is that a 4-5% price increase on your last year's pricing, or is that a 4-5% price increase on the price you originally agreed on those contracts? Because it's quite different.
It's on the smaller amount. It's on what we're repricing.
Okay. So can I infer from that therefore, if a contract is 3-5 years, it's roughly 1.5% CAGR per year, the price increase. And is that really enough to offset some of the cost inflation that you're seeing?
Yeah.
Well, I think he's saying if you get indexation of that amount, right?
Well, my question is, let's say you agreed a contract 3 years
ago. Yeah, so you're always going to have slippage.
No, you rebase it. No, you rebase it.
It's a price increase on the price that we're paying this year. So it's a price increase on the price from 3 years ago, which is going to be an index for the price increase on the index price, not the original price.
So you start off here.
So it's a one-year step up. Yeah.
So you get 5%, and then that will index into the future.
Okay, fine. Good. On the... ratings agencies. On the ratings agencies, it seems that at the margin, they're potentially going to become a bit more onerous around how they treat rail. Does that worry you at all, especially if we are going into a big retender process and you are going to be bidding actively?
I think, first of all, when you deal with the rating agencies, they have what they publish as their rules. Then what they do is they keep quite a bit of it to their own judgment. So in terms of, and I've always talked about, when we talk about the FFO ratio, is that we can calculate it based upon the discussions that we have with them. But what they then do, just to give you an example, is it's not a pinpoint FFO to net debt ratio. It takes into account what you've done historically and what they forecast that you will do in the future. But they do not tell us, and I wouldn't if I was in their position, they don't tell us, right, what percentage of each year do they take. So you have to put all of this in that context. And I think what that does, and the reason that they're doing it, is that they can then apply common sense to what's really happening in a business. And therefore, in our assessment, I'm looking at my treasurer and he's nodding his head, so I'm hopefully explaining this correctly, Chris. So that's the first thing. The second thing is in terms of the guarantees that you have to give, which Anand, I think is what you're referring to, then that's more driven by the fact that the rail industry is requiring more effectively risk capital to be put up. And there's two elements of that. First of all, the rating agencies, or certain of the rating agencies, only count an element of that. So they don't count the bonding, but they do count the parent company support. So that does go in, and those numbers are increasing. So we have to put that into the models. Without getting into too much detail, what I will say is we've looked at the major bids coming forward. Clearly, until you see the terms of the contract, you don't know what risk capital you're going to have to put in. But we've looked at what we expect, and that will not prevent us from bidding for these contracts going forward.
Okay, great. Thank you. And then just the final question. Just to follow on from something earlier, it sounds as if in UK bus or first bus, you're baking into your margin targets that you're telling us all the fuel price savings directly hitting your bottom line. I think some of your competitors are taking a different approach, and they're kind of keeping that in the back pocket to keep fares below inflation to try and get volume growth back. Am I thinking about that the right way?
I think the key issue is, are we planning to go back to the old days of putting up prices massively and cutting routes, which got the business into the situation it is at the moment? And the answer to that is definitely no. So when we build our models looking forwards, we have modest, i.e. effectively in line with inflation, fares increases. And that overall, you'll see some headlines on what people are doing in specific areas. That is generally what other people are doing. And if that it continues to be the case, which we expect it to, then the benefit of fuel will drop through to the bottom line.
You know, it is a fair point that when you get these reductions, you know, there can be a issue in the marketplace, especially you know, where you're providing what is a service for public service. But, of course, we've so aggressively cut prices as we've reset our commercial proposition that we aren't in that position. You know, others have been walking up revenue at a time when we've been swallowing inflation. And fuel is, you know, a relatively small piece of the overall cost picture. So we don't really think we face that kind of pressure, that we think that the way we're viewing the advantage we get from fuel in the next year is solid.
Okay,
others might be in a very different position, but it might be because of their behavior in the market in the last couple of years.
Our fuel costs in bus are less than 15%. So.
Okay, great. Thank you.
Morning, it's Alex Patterson from Investec. Just on your labour costs, you made some comments about the minimum wage. I'm assuming you were saying that a very small part of your workforce is less than, say, £7.20, the living wage that will come in April next year. Would you also know what sort of proportion of your sort of bus and rail workforce are going to be paid less than, say, £9, which looks like the living wage for 2020?
Alex, off the top of my head, I don't, and I wouldn't like to guess. We don't see it as an issue. We think people are paid well above that. Yeah, in particular for rail.
Yes, absolutely for rail. And this is above £9.
Yes.
And for bus, maybe we can follow up later.
Yeah, we can follow up later.
Thank you.
Anybody else? Damien, a follow-up.
Before I ask the question, can I just say, Chris, thank you very much for your help over your time at First Group. Much appreciated. And then just one final one. If bus does hit or get close to its 10% margin target, how much does that help what Giles Fermi gets paid? Like, what's his incentive to do that? And how much big difference does that make to him? Apart from, obviously, personal success.
But he's in the bonus program, and he's in a long-term program, and they will both be dramatically affected by that. Similarly, the people who work for him are almost exclusively rewarded by the performance in their division under the new approach that this board has taken. So they are very focused on delivering those goals.
And on your first question, thank you very much, and I have enjoyed working with you all, and I do hope our paths cross in the future.